All right. Well, joining me now is another, a very dear friend as well, Karen Kingston. Karen, welcome back to the broadcast. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Brandon. I can't believe you forgot I was on. I kept thinking I was on since like 11 a.m. this morning.
That's your fault. That's your fault. That's an inside joke. Whenever I book Karen, she has a hard time keeping track of 8 o'clock Central. And so she's calling me at 6 o'clock tonight on Skype. I'm ready. I'm like, no, that's 6 o'clock your time tonight, 8 o'clock my time. So
yeah,
it's not my fault you can't tell time.
I know.
But anyway, you're glad you're with us. Now, did you send me over a PowerPoint presentation?
I did. I'm going to share my screen just because.
Oh, you didn't send anything?
No, I was going to share my screen to make it easier.
Oh, okay. Wow. Does Logan know how to do this?
I just have to click share screen, I think.
Logan says, go ahead, see if it works. It's just live television, nothing to worry about. It's just live TV.
Start sharing, yeah. So you can, it's working, right?
Just seeing you.
Yeah, okay. So I'll put my PowerPoint up. Now can you see my PowerPoint?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, we don't see it.
You don't see the PowerPoint?
No. Uh-uh. Just you.
No way.
Yes way.
Oh, sorry. Hold on. Let's do this again.
You might wanna email it over.
Okay, wait, no, hold on. Share screen.
Okay.
Switch screen or window. Switch screen.
Mm-hmm.
Can you see it?
Nope. No, we just see you.
No way.
Yes.
Sorry.
Yes way. I'm lying to you in front of everybody. Yeah.
Really? We've done this before.
No, we have never done this before.
I texted you this.
Okay, you always email it, and then I run it from this end, and you tell me next slide. No,
I
go
know,
back.
The next slide takes up so much time.
Yeah. Oh, no, not nearly as much time as this is taking up.
That's a misunderstanding, Brandon, that this just happened.
All right. Do you want to email it real quick?
Yeah, if I can.
If you email it, I'll get it right here at the desk. This is 2022. We have computers on our news desk now.
No, it's not that. It's that I wanted to be in the driver's seat for this presentation.
Okay,
it's fine.
All right.
It's fine. Okay.
I promise I'll do whatever you tell me to do.
Why don't we talk about what we're going to talk about? Computer.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Why won't we fill some time by talking about what we're going to talk about? All right, let's talk a little bit about our friend Dr. Artis. I like Dr. Artis. But I get a lot of emails, a lot of texts, people saying, are you going to talk about Dr. Artis's interview with Stu Peters and all that? And I said, well, I got to see the proof. I'm having a hard time buying this idea of what's being presented. And then Mike Adams came on last night and presented the idea of, however, some venom being in pharmaceuticals. And he came with documentation, and we showed it on the screen, and we talked about it. And, of course, I reached out to you a few days ago, but I had to wait for you to get back from vacation. I have no idea what those are. I hear people take them. I don't know what they are, but I hear people take them. So I had to wait for you to get back from vacation. And when you did, I said, I got to have you on. I don't know what to make of all this venom stuff. Is it in pharmaceuticals as well? Like Mike Adams was saying to us last night, and you prepared a whole presentation. So I'm not buying it's in the water. Are you?
No, it's not in the water. There's no evidence that our water supply was contaminated with these lipid nanoparticle encapsulated toxin bioweapons. And we'll go through that. But yeah, as far as using venom as pharmaceutical agents, it's common. So or venom or other neurotoxins, right? So Botox is botulism toxin. So you know a lot of toxins are from foods, and they're bacterial based, and they'll cause paralysis of your GI system, you know, or your trachea, and so you suffocate. But
oh, wow.
You know, doses like Botox, you know, people use it. Actually, they use it for pain in their spinal cord injections. I've gotten Botox in my back, believe it or not, for back pain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, small doses to paralyze your face so you don't have wrinkles. I worked for Medtronic. I used a product.
I have to tell you, maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm old school, but I just don't think putting Botox near your brain on your face is a good idea. I know millions of women do it. But I just,
They use it for migraine too.
I
So,
know, I know.
yeah, so it stops, it stops the vascular changes that cause migraines. And I used or from I worked out for Medtronic neuromodulation department, but then I worked in their implant, and they use a toxin from a snail to excrete small doses of the venom to paralyze certain parts of the spinal cord region to stop pain, right? And these people
Right.
were, as Mike Adams was saying, they were addicts, but they didn't have to take it orally. It was injected directly in their bodies. So this is a common thing. But what I think the point was that Mike brought up was that Dr. Artis brought to the awareness that snake venom could be potentially part of a bioweapon attack in both the vaccines, the spike proteins, or as we have talked on your show before, that these lipid nanoparticle technologies enable either through it could be through something you drink, something you eat, an aerosol application. They can encapsulate not just mRNA technology, but any synthetic made or naturally found, but everything's recent, synthetically made toxin that can be used as a bioweapon attack. And I think that's what the bigger discussion needs to be. And I, it also for me, what I did is I went back. I have a publication that I actually got from June of last year. I sent you the slides, so
Oh
let me
yeah,
know
I
if.
got it. I got the first one here. I'm ready to go, and I promise I will do whatever you tell me when you tell me, so that you're
Okay.
in the you're in the driver's seat, okay?
Okay, so just so people know that there was a sequencing study done out of Pittsburgh, as Dr. Artis had said. It was actually published. It was pre-published in May. There's a publication in June. For whatever reason, the
We're
last
gonna
version I
get
have.
scolded, Logan, if we don't show this. There we
Well, no,
go.
not yet. Okay, we're not there yet. Okay.
Oh, we're not there.
Anyway, it did come from Pittsburgh. So there is sequencing of the peptides from cobra and crepe venom
Okay.
in a spike protein that is related to the SARS-CoV-2 virus.
Okay.
So, but there's this is going to be a roller coaster. We're going to go through this really fast. There's a lot of information. It's
All
almost as
right.
if,
I'm
yeah,
ready.
it's like a summary of me being on your show over the last 10 months.
Oh, wow. All
Yeah,
right.
but like a finale with the
Well,
climax.
let's not
Like,
make it a finale. Nobody wants to go anywhere.
I know. Well,
Don't be prophesying your own demise. Here we go.
All right, so let's get started.
All right, here we go.
So again, I think what Dr. Artis brought to to everyone's attention is to keep in mind that the vaccines are allegedly an mRNA sequence for a virus that came from a bat. This is the original master patent for the lipid nanoparticles for the mRNA vaccines that are owned by Moderna for all vaccines that use the LNP technology. This is just an excerpt. So I agree with Dr. Artis. I wrote this letter back in May of 2021 to dozens and dozens of influencers, doctors, physician organizations. I didn't know you at the time because I bet you would have responded.
I would have.
And mainstream media, where I included not just this patent, but I included the study out of Wuhan Institute of Virology, where they were converging the SARS-CoV-1 virus with HIV glycoprotein 120, monkey HIV, mice leukemia. I included a number of studies. And what I had just said is, hey, please take a look at this patent. Please take a look at the studies that I've enclosed. Please take a look at some of the FDA filings. And if you have someone that is an expert in infectious diseases, I believe that they will conclude that the COVID-19 injections are bioweapons that contain gain-of-function chimeric viruses and toxins. Note that I use the word toxins. I did not say it was a virus or a vaccine that produced a spike protein. I specifically used toxin. A toxin is a poison. Under the guise of mRNA therapeutic vaccines combined with a diagnostic therapeutic LNP platform, and per the patent, it can target specific organs throughout the body, including but not limited to reproductive, cardiovascular, pulmonary, CNS, and specifically crossing the blood-brain barrier. So why did I say toxins? In this patent, it states, this is the world patent for the lipid nanoparticles, next slide, clearly under section 0402, in some embodiments, the therapeutic prophylactics of what's being delivered in the lipid nanoparticle is a cytotoxin. And a cytotoxin is a cytotoxic agent. So that's an agent that kills cells that is detrimental to cells. That's it. So it can cause the cells to blow up, it can cause them to coagulate, it could cause them to disintegrate, et cetera, et cetera. So it's very clear that this is not just a virus. What does snake venom do? It can cause platelets to literally blow up. It can cause them to coagulate. So it does have cytotoxic effects. Keep in mind, I want to just tie this into all the evidence that's already out there as this hypothesis that snake venom is in there. Go on to the next slide. There's also the NIH 2017 nanotechnology patent, and it's called vaccine nanotechnology. It's owned by the NIH, yet in section 9, the nanotechnology in some embodiments is used at the bottom, you can see, to deliver a small molecule that is a toxin from a chemical weapon, an agent of biowarfare, or a hazardous environmental agent. The term vaccine, you can go back to talking to me, Brandon. The term vaccine, according to our government, I think it's clear right now, does not mean vaccine. All it means is how can we inoculate, how can we inject into the human population, or as they refer to us sometimes in the patents as animals, including humans, agents that can cause cytotoxic effects that are poisonous or chemical weapons of biowarfare. And I just want to be clear about that. So we were all told we're being injected with a vaccine. As we go through these patents, I think it's going to be very alarming to see that some people may have been injected with an mRNA sequence in addition to all the other stuff we've talked about, and others may have been injected with what they are calling a spike protein, which according to the patents and some of this research, looks to be nothing more than a synthetically recreated man-made compilation of venoms from various animals and reptiles and bacteria.
Wow.
Yeah. So let's keep going.
Okay.
I should have started with that. So this is what I thought was a really good point. Was Dr. Artis is like, how do you explain these side effects? I know we've seen this slide 1,000 times, but in case people haven't seen it before, October 22nd, 2020, FDA and the Center for Biologics and Evaluation Research, those who are in charge of these vaccines, quote unquote, they listed all the side effects that they knew that were going to happen from these quote unquote injections. One of them is non-anaphylactic allergic reactions, okay? And that's related to Kawasaki syndrome, which is also similar to multi-system inflammatory syndrome in children. So how are they getting these cytokine storms? And we're going to talk about that a little bit more because that's what got the researchers at Pittsburgh down the road to look for something outside of a coronavirus in the spike protein. They're like, this isn't multi-system inflammatory syndrome or Kawasaki syndrome, as did the Center of Kawasaki Disease out of Japan say. They're like, this looks like toxic shock syndrome from a poison or a toxin. Also, you can explain the combination of thrombosis and thrombocytopenia purpura. So how are platelets instantly disintegrating as well as causing massive blood clots at the same time? That's usually caused by a venom, a toxin, or a rare genetic disorder, or they say it's idiopathic, but it's usually from a poison. So go on. So that's why I thought Dr. Artis brought up a good point. So here's a case where a young girl, 7 years old in South China, gets bit by a crate snake, and she suffers from massive blood coagulation and necrosis of her tissues and her organs. So death of her tissues and organs, and it's caused by a snake bite. I'm going to tie this in. Go on to the next slide. Here is a 15-year-old boy who was injected with the Pfizer vaccine. This is early VAERS data, and what did he have? He had massive heart failure. And we don't know if this was the myocarditis that was caused by polyethylene glycol, but it seems like the PEG-related anaphylactic reactions that happen in the children, they're calling mild myocarditis because the children seem to be surviving it. He died within 48 hours. Could this have been caused by a toxin, a spike protein that was not a spike protein produced just from a coronavirus, but that contained other toxins in it, both bacterial and venomous? Go on to the next slide. Keep in mind, everyone was saying early on when the vaccines rolled out, it was only J&J that caused the thrombocytopenia. That is when your platelets disappear. Okay, it's like anemia, but you also get massive blood coagulation at the same time. Didn't make sense. The American College of Cardiology put forth treatment guidelines, which I believe include warfarin, aspirin, and Lovivax, so blood thinners. But if it's caused from venom, then this treatment would only cause people to further bleed out. Okay, and what else causes combined thrombosis and thrombocytopenia? Snake bites from various Thai snake venoms, including the crate snake, is in that area as well. And I just pulled randomly. Like, keep going. No, because it gets. So I want to point out too. Here is a young 5-month-old baby who, through breastfeeding with his to his mother, basically within 48 hours after she got the second dose, he became inconsolable, and he died from thrombosis and thrombocytopenia. This poor little baby boy was infected with the spike protein through spreading through his mother's breast milk. And it caused thrombosis and thrombocytopenia, blood clotting and platelets disintegrating in his body. Very painful, similar to what you would see if he had been bitten by a venomous snake. This
Wow.
baby's life maybe could have been saved if they had treated him properly. We don't know. So these are things to bring up. I do have evidence. I'm not just going to hypothesize. Let's keep going, though, because I want to get to the evidence. And then the other thing that causes thrombosis and thrombocytopenia is rabies and the rabies vaccine. There's a number of case studies. And that is because of something called, primarily, they believe, because of Staphylococcus endotoxin B, a very pathogenic disease-causing bacteria. And they believe that's what causes the combined blood clotting and thrombocytopenia and toxic shock syndrome in rabies. And it's in the rabies envelope. And we're going to get to this too. And it was in the rabies vaccine. So let's keep going through my slides. So back it all up. Remember when the World Health Organization said, hey, we've sequenced the virus, but and we think it mostly came from a bat out of Wuhan, but and humans, but we can't figure out there's like this missing animal. And we're trying to figure out who the missing animal, this missing host animal, how it jumped from humans
What were
to,
they referred to as a missing link, I guess?
yeah, they call it the missing. Do you remember when they're talking about the pangolin theory?
Yep.
Yeah. So okay, so they never fully sequenced the virus, but we were told it came from a bat and humans, right?
Right.
I'm going to show you one of the earliest sequences of the viral sequences from nine people who were the first nine people infected at the Wuhan market, and they sequenced the virus, and what you're about to see is jaw-dropping. So let's keep going.
Okay.
So this study was published, I believe it's in January of 2020, and what it is it is the nine cases of people who became infected with what they're calling the SARS-CoV-2 virus right there at the Wuhan sea market. And what they did was they used a sequencing method to show what they call the phylogenetic, so the animal species class makeup. Go on to the next slide. What they said, I'm sorry, in the introduction, I skipped it, was that they proved human to human transmission. That's a lie, because I showed this earlier. This is at the outbreak in Wuhan. The first 13 patients, this doesn't show it. There was no human to human transmission in 631 contacts. This is the study out of the Wuhan hospital where they sent over 200 healthcare workers. None of them got infected. So when they said in this study they proved human to human transmission, in medical settings and family, it's a lie. The one family setting that they refer to, which I believe was reference 12, was the family was eating the same food from the Wuhan Institute of, from the Wuhan wet market. So go on to the next slide. I just wanted to disprove that. Here are the next slide. This just shows there was no humans infected in Hong Kong either. Okay, so what they did was they tested nine patients who had been hospitalized. What they all had in common was eight of them purchased food and ate from the Wuhan market, the seafood market, and one was at the hotel next door and likely ate food from that market as well. And this is between December 23rd and 27th, 2019. That's a typo, it's not 2018, 2019. And what they did was they got 10 samples from these nine patients from the bronchoalveolar, in their lungs. And go on to the next slide. What they found was what I just said. So there's not, they got 10 samples, or sorry, they got nine patient samples from eight complete and two partial genome sequence. So I guess they didn't sample one of the patients. So I take that back. So it was nine samples. And what they did from here is they uploaded it to the open source database, and they were able to create a PCR test based on the phylogenetic sequencing of the virus. So they all of the codons and amino acids from the species that made up the full viral code for the SARS-CoV-2 virus. Go on to the next slide. This is what's alarming. If you read the findings say it sounds great, right? Okay, from the nine patients, which I think actually they only fully tested eight, there was a 99.98% sequence identity among the patients. But as you further read on, it says 88% were from two bat-derived SARS viruses. So 88% came from two different types of bats. And then it looked like another 79% came from another type of bat from a different part of China. And then there was a MERS So a respiratory, Middle Eastern respiratory human part that looked like it was about 50%. And then they go on to talk about how there was a subgenus SARS-CoV virus, so a non-bat, but within the same genus. So like you'll see there's like hedgehogs and mice that made a part of it as well. And still they're in the S1, S2 cleavage site, the furin cleavage site. They couldn't figure out some of the amino acid sequences there, and that's what they're calling the key residues, and that's called the PRRA. So it really doesn't sound that actually convincing that they got a great sequence of the virus, but this is what they got. Going to the next slide. This is when your jaw should drop, and we're going to go through this in more detail. So when they sequence the virus, up at the top, those are some human sequences from various areas of China of a human coronavirus. Then there's the bats from all different areas of China. Then there's more humans from Wuhan area of China with the SARS-CoV-1 virus. Then there is again some more bats who are from Kenya and other parts of China. We're going to go into more detail. Then there is a Middle Eastern human sample of the virus. Then there is a hedgehog part of the virus from Germany. And then there are two mice, one from China, one from the US, that made up part of the SARS-CoV-2 virus. And then there is another human from the US, United States, who made up part of the sequence from the SARS-CoV-2 virus. Do you think this was natural?
No.
Yeah, and so here's the other thing that is alarming about whether or not there's any snake amino acids or peptides in here. At least all of these are mammals. A snake is a reptile. So they never could figure out that sequence in the S1, S2 cleavage site, but they're like, they've never really figured that out because they were always saying that this jumped from a mammal to another mammal. How do you explain us how a snake sequence got messed up in this whole thing? But this is obvious, obviously, that this is not, this came from a lab. And these viral sequences go back to 2011, some of them. So, you know, you're talking about decades of research. Go on to the next slide. And this is from, we went over this on your show many times. This is from the EcoHealth Alliance pitch to DARPA, where they say, we have collected over 180 unique bat coronaviruses across 10,000 samples across all of China and other parts of the world. And oh, lo and from humans too. And lo and behold, you know, go on to the next slide. The viral sequence is made up of chimeras from all over the world. I thought this was interesting too. In we've gone over this before. In EcoHealth Alliance, they say that they're making chimeric viruses from the bat genomes and other genomes across mice, humans, et cetera, et cetera. I thought it was interesting that they say right here too that the clinical signs that are not reduced by SARS-CoV-2 monoclonal antibodies, therapy, or vaccination. So they're saying, look, we're making new viruses that when it infects humans, the vaccines aren't going to work and monoclonal antibodies aren't going to work. These are not my words. These are the inventors of the bioweapon. They also go on to say that people living up to 6 kilometers from the test caves of the SARS-CoV-2 antibodies, where they were spraying down the bats with the lipid nanoparticles, some of them have developed antibodies to the new bat coronavirus, and they say suggesting active spillover. Yeah, active spillover is because they're being infected by the bioweapon that they're spraying, actually, not in bat caves, but throughout Wuhan.
Oh, wow.
So go on. Yeah, that's what this is. So I'm going back to the sequence. I just wanted to show people up close. Here's part of the sequence. You can see the sequences from bats from all different parts of China, Yunnan, Guizhou, Guangxi, China. I believe that stands for Beijing, Hubei. HK is Hong Kong, China, and then other parts of China. Go on to the next part of the sequence. And this is what I mentioned before. Zhejiang, China. So these are all over the country of China. This human coronavirus is from Saudi Arabia. This is from a hedgehog from Germany. And again, the two mice, and then again, the Hong Kong, actually United States slash human coronavirus. So this clearly is not come from nature. We all thought it just came from a bat. I know most of us didn't believe that, but we thought it jumped from a bat in a human, that it wasn't made up across, you know, looks like almost 20 different animal species and genres of sequences of viruses, or more than 20. So go on to the next slide. So in that same publication, up in this little corner where there's a red circle in the star, I put the red circle there, they're going, what is this missing, spike one, spike two furin cleavage site, the PRR, the missing amino acid peptide residues? Is it a pangolin? So go on to the next slide. And we heard maybe it's a pangolin, and we thought, this seems, I mean, many people in the scientific industry is like, this seems like a long stretch. And even the guys at South Park and John Stewart was like, this is a long stretch to say that it came from a pangolin, but I guess we shouldn't expect much more from the CCP propaganda. Well, it didn't come from the CCP propaganda, Brandon. This is from June of 2021. This publication in the Journal of Virology is from the Center for Biological Evaluations Research out of our own United States FDA. And they're the ones that are suggesting that this either came from a another genus of a bat virus, or it came from the pangolin. So this came from our United States. That was their idea. And this was published in June 2021. Go on to the next slide. What they failed to do was read the research out of the University of Pittsburgh, which was published in a peer-reviewed journal in June 2020. It was available in for the spike coronavirus in June 2020. There was a preprint in May. I know this is dated September 28th, but I had printed out this publication last year in June. So I've held on to it, and when I went online to look it up again, this is the publication. So you can see it's called Super Antigenic Character of Insert Unique to SARS-CoV-2 Spike Protein Skewered by T Cell Receptors in Patients with Hyperinflammation. So they're saying, why is there hyperinflammation in people, and it appears there is a super antigenic. This seems to be a toxin that is active in people who are having hyperinflammation, who are infected with the spike protein, not necessarily just the SARS-CoV-2 virus. This was done primarily out of the University of Pittsburgh with support from UCLA and also out of a university in Germany. So go on to the next slide to see what these scientists found. The hypothesis started was when they took a look at what they were calling Kawasaki syndrome, multi-system inflammatory syndrome, in children. They noticed there was only happening in Italy. So think of, I think it was Lombardy, Italy, just north of Milan, and in New York City. And they said, huh, why isn't this happening anywhere else? And why is the International Kawasaki Organization out of Japan saying Kawasaki syndrome, multi-system inflammatory system in children has nothing to do with the SARS-CoV-2 virus? So they said this looks similar to toxic shock syndrome. So they go on to talk about, to hypothesize that the SARS-CoV-2 may possess super antigenic fragments, super inflammatory toxic fragments that induce inflammatory cascades that can contribute to hyperinflammation and a cytokine storm in adults and in children. This is really interesting because they say, what would elicit such reactions to involve a host cell cytotoxic adaptive immune response? Why would
You're breaking up on me there for a second. You
and they
there?
go on to say reactive.
You there? Karen? I think we just, do we just lose? She's frozen. Call Karen back real quick, Logan, if you would. Throw that slide back up there if you want, if you would. I want to comment on one thing. Such a reaction was not observed in the SARS-CoV pandemic of 2003, SARS-1 hereafter. What is unique to SARS-CoV-2 and how might recent mutation? Wow. Okay, keep going. I was just reading some of this because I got a question here, but pick up. We lost you at about
Yeah,
three.
so what they're saying is these cytokine storms and what looks like toxic shock syndrome, which looks like poisoning, just like whether the CIA or the KGB poisons individuals. That's what they're like. Why does it look like that? Because MERS and SARS-CoV-1 did not look like
Yeah,
that.
see, such a reaction was not observed in the SARS-CoV pandemic of 2003. So, what is
Yeah.
unique to this SARS-CoV-2, and how might recent mutations in SARS-CoV-2S have
Spike
promoted such?
protein.
Yeah.
Yeah, the S stands for spike protein. So they have a reasonable hypothesis. So they're like, so keep going to the next slide. So this is actually the abstract. And what the scientists did was they got samples of the SARS-CoV-2 virus from Europe. So they wanted the European mutation. So this is different that was in the Asian part of the world. This is what's in Europe and allegedly to what may have been in the United States. And the mutation is called the D839Y-N-E version. So they got samples. Go on the next slide. And this is normal. So they got 38 patient samples who were infected with mild to moderate COVID-19, and 8 of the patients Had severe inflammatory COVID-19. And they had an independent review board that went over this. And what they found was the T cell receptor beta joint gene diversity. They extracted, they looked at how those who had hyperinflammatory reactions versus those who didn't, how the antibodies and antigens in their bodies were reacting to the receptors in their cells. And anything that this TRBV is T cell receptor biological variant. So anything that was hyperactive, they took a closer look at. So go on to the next slide. And when they took a closer look at it, again, what they were looking at is the SARS-CoV-2 spike protein, why there is a high affinity site, right, for the A2 receptor bindings at that PRRA insertion. That is that S1, S2 furin cleavage site. You've heard the senators talk about it. They're like, we aren't really sure what the amino acids are there. They're like, well, there's a lot of binding activity going on there and it's not good. There's a lot of cross-reactogenicity and inflammation. So they say further examination shows a close structural similarity. This is called staphylococcal enterooxin B antigen. So it is a super bacteria, which is typically enveloped in rabies virus, and also similar to neurotoxins and a viral super antigen. So they're like, this doesn't look like a common cold, a coronavirus at all. And what they found was the neurotoxins from a cobra and the Bungura genera. So this is the king cobra out of Kenya. And then this is the crate snake out of southern China.
Whoa.
And what they found was this neurotoxins looked very similar. And also what the SCB looks similar to what's in the envelope of a rabies strain. And so they further noticed segment bears close similarity also, and we've heard this before, to the HIV glycoprotein 120. So the way I found this study was back in June or May, it might have been, when India came out saying glycoprotein 120 was found in the spike protein, I did a literature search. I came up with this study. I remember seeing them mentioning the snake venom. I wasn't going to touch it with a 10-foot pole. And then when Dr. Artis came forward, I was like, oh, I read about that. So that's typically what happens when you guys see me report is a physician, a doctor comes forward, an expert. And I just for fun, because I read all this stuff, I bring it forward. So go on to the next slide.
And by the way, where are we reading this from? What is the source we're reading from? What is this?
This is from PNAS. This was published September 28th.
Oh, that's right. That's right. That was from that document right there.
Yeah, I can send you the links. So yeah, it's a peer-reviewed journal and it's been published. My original peer-reviewed publication date I have is June 20th. I for some reason, they reissued it. I don't know why. So keep going. Yeah. Does that mean you're going to turn into, like, you're getting direct king cobra snake venom in, you know, released into your system, whether or not you got a vaccine or exposed to the SARS-CoV-2 virus? Is this what you're producing? No, that's not what's happening. That is the king cobra from Kenya, though. What this means is these are the sequences. So this is important. So they sequenced out the peptides, the amino acids. These are not the full sequences, but, you know, an expert in genetic sequencing of the viruses can go through this. So here you see the naja, that's a type of king cobra. The bungarotoxin is from a crate snake. The rabies virus protein is from rabies. There is another king cobra in there as well. And then the HIV glycoprotein 120. Why is this important? So it doesn't mean that you have AIDS. HIV glycoprotein 120 is the envelope. The envelope is what allows penetration into the nucleus of a cell. Right? That's what that part of the virus does. So each one of these sequences serves a purpose. So I don't know if people saw the interview of Dr. Malone with Joe Rogan, but he joked around about saying how in the 80s when he worked for the Salk Institute, he's like, yeah, we had a bunch of monkeys there with HIV. Let's put that into the mRNA sequence. Well, why would you want to do that? Well, if you are an expert and inventor of mRNA gene editing technology, you need to make sure that your mRNA gets into the cell to actually change the genetic makeup and make genetic mutations to the cellular lines in the human body. So that's what HIV glycoprotein 120 does. So what was that rabies sequence? We can assume that rabies sequence encodes that super bacteria I mentioned. What can we assume potentially those cobra venom sequences and that crate venom sequences do. Based on what we're seeing from people, we can assume that they cause hyperinflammatory syndromes, right, that would cause toxic shock and organ failure, as well as the combined blood clotting and platelet annihilation, if you will. So again, they're just taking sequences out of toxins or viruses that serve a specific function. It's not the entire sequence of the venom. It's not the entire sequence of HIV. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but you are saying they are using some venom. Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying they're using the sequence from various venoms that serve a specific function. So they use the sequence from HIV to be able to penetrate the nucleus.
Okay.
They're using sequences from venom viruses in this, and I don't want people, so you have to remember, this is a sample from Europe, from Europeans who had severe COVID-19, and this is a sequence of the recreated spike protein that the scientists made from those patients' samples from the bronchial fluid.
So help us lay people understand this. Are you saying that they somewhere along the way took the venom from a cobra and used it in their testing and took portion of it and then put it into the bioweapon?
Yeah, just like they did with HIV. That's what I'm saying, exactly. Just like they did with HIV virus that they added to the sequence.
And why would someone do that? Why would you do that to someone?
Just like they took parts of a virus from a hedgehog and stuck it in the SARS-CoV-2 virus. Because these are global sociopaths, you know, who are creating bioweapons.
To deliberately kill people, right?
They want to kill people, and they also think of people as subhuman and pestilence.
So when we talk about the Kissinger report from 1974, the Kissinger report from 74 that talks about the need to depopulate and stop the population from getting above 8 billion, and right now we're at 7.8, almost 7.9 billion, and they're saying we can't sustain over 8 billion. So you need to have depopulation. This has been going on since 74 with that report, plus others promoting it before that. Are you saying to me they're deliberately putting these toxins in there because they want a lot of dead people?
Yes, that's exactly what I'm saying.
Because, I mean, why else would you do that, right?
Why is there an NIH patent called vaccine nanotechnology, and in some embodiments it can deliver a chemical weapon of biowarfare unless you're trying to kill people? And a toxin. But it's worse than that. You have to understand the sociopathy. If they wanted to kill us, then just put cyanide out there and kill people. They're making transgenic, chimeric, multi-species genetic material that they're injecting into humans that comes from bats, that comes from rodents, that comes from hedgehogs, that comes from snakes. They think we are the pestilence of the world. And they're injecting those genetic sequences into the global citizens' bodies and our children's bodies. And some of this is transgenerational and will be passed on.
Oh, wow.
That's what's so sick. But as we go through this, you're going to see the spike protein has its own separate patent and can be made independently of the mRNA and can be delivered independently of the mRNA. So some of those people that got sick in Wuhan, you know, it's reasonable to hypothesize, if you take a look at the lipid nanoparticle technology, that the LNP simply encapsulated what they're calling a spike protein, which is a man-made recreated synthetic toxin from snake venom, rabies venom, and HIV, with a time release, you know, that can be delivered through food, ice, water, or aerosol. And then once it's released in the body, that's why people in Wuhan fell over. That's why people in Lombardy dropped. That's why there were people in New York City who, you know, I remember the young actor went to the hospital just having a slight fever, and within six hours, he was having his limbs amputated from massive blood clotting and then died from heart failure and organ failure because he was poisoned. This was not from mRNA. mRNA takes time to work within the body, hijack the cell, and then start producing the spike protein. People were just injected with or exposed to a toxin. And keep in mind, when our government says vaccinate does not just mean delivering through a needle. It could be an aerosol version. Let's keep going through the slides, because
I've got 12 minutes left.
Knew I was going to lose that time. So the crate snake, I just wanted to show your audience this. Look at where it can be found, all parts of South China, Guangdong, Yunnan, Zhejiang, Hong Kong, all the places where, oh, the alleged bats were too. Okay, I just wanted to point that out. I know that's a coincidence. Go on the next slide. As you go through this study, this is the addendum to the study. This was very interesting. What they said was there was positions of the SARS-CoV-2 spike protein that cross-reacted with the binding sites, the antibody antigen binding sites, in people who were not exposed to the SARS-CoV-2 virus. Yet they were having reactivity to a spike protein. So how come they were having reactivity to the spike protein, but there was no trace of the virus in the actual full sequence of the virus in their body? That's what they found interesting. Keep going. I find that interesting too. They also talk about how this just causes the inflammatory storm that they interleukin 6, tumor necrosis factor alpha. Anyway, the scientists and doctors will know that these are massive cytokine inflammatory cytokines. Go on to the next one. And there's why is it important what I just showed you about the spike protein? Because keep in mind, this is Jason McClellan from Moderna. He worked with Barney Graham from the NIH. We went over this before. This was published in Chemical and Engineering News last year. And at the bottom, it states that Barney Graham and Jason McClellan, this is Jason, on June 10th, found out that there was this virus and they had to sequence out the spike protein because it was uploaded to this open source thing and they got right to work. And then they figured out how to put in two prolines to keep the SARS-CoV-2 prefusion spike. And they figured this all out in January of 2020, right? And then they were able to use that spike protein in various vaccines. Why is this a problem? Go on to the next slide. If you look at the patent for the spike protein, and there's a patent for the spike protein separate from the mRNA sequencing, which also doesn't make sense because the mRNA is supposed to produce the spike protein, but there's a separate patent for the spike protein, which isn't just one spike protein, it's multiples. This was filed on April 24th, 2019, 8 months before the virus was available. And it was issued on February 27th of 2020, about 6 weeks after the virus sequence became available. That's a problem for Jason and Barney. How did they file a patent for a spike protein that they didn't have access to until January 2020, but they filed the patent April 2019?
Oh, wow.
Keep going. It gets worse. It gets worse. No, this is a problem. That company that you just skipped over, go
Yep,
back one slide.
right there, sorry.
This is the holding company for all of the patents for the technologies and the vaccines that are currently being used now by five companies. It's called GeoVax. We went over this before. Go to the next slide. In an SEC filing, they state that that HHS licensed to them several patents. Go to the next slide. One of those patents was the license for the spike protein that's produced by the vaccines. This licensing agreement happened on October 22nd, 2020, but according to their SEC filing, they said the patent was pending per application, even though I just showed you it was granted in February of 2020, 8 months ago. They lied in their SEC filing. It gets worse. Keep going. We know in the Pfizer vaccine, Comirnaty produces the SARS-CoV-2 sequence of the Wuhan Institute of Virology spike protein. I think the American people were under the assumption, whether it was Pfizer or Moderna or any other vaccine that was producing a spike protein, it was all the same spike protein. Go on to the next slide. GeoVax licensed out five different spike proteins to five different companies. And also, why is the spike protein being licensed out to Johnson and Johnson and Novavax when those are supposed to be full sequence viruses, not just the spike protein? That doesn't really make a lot of sense. The spike protein shouldn't be separate from the full sequence of the virus. Those should always be going together. Why is that separate? If that doesn't make any sense, keep going on to the next slide, other than this is an independent antigen. Also, they filed the patent for the spike protein for the SARS-CoV-2 virus. Well, right here you can see here's three different formulations for spike proteins. One is for a Hong Kong spike protein, another one is for a Middle Eastern spike protein using their 2P technology, and a third one is for the SARS-CoV-2 spike protein using the 2P prolon technology. So you're like, okay, well, I guess it's just for the SARS-CoV-2P proline. But if you go on to the next one, is it for that? Or is it for the Wuhan Institute of Virology spike protein? And what spike protein is being produced by what vaccine allegedly? And can these be delivered independently? And this OC43 spike protein infects cattle and humans. This one is called the pig epidemic diarrhea vaccine, which kills all piglets from dehydration and diarrhea, can be deadly to babies and young children, although not just really disruptive to adults. And this last one over here causes massive inflammation of the endothelial cell linings of your respiratory system, as opposed to your cardiovascular system, which is what the SARS-CoV-2 one seems to do. These are all independent toxins and bioweapons. Keep going on to the next slide. And that's in the patent. Go on to the next slide. Again, this is EcoHealth Alliance. EcoHealth Alliance said, look, what we did is we found the bat coronaviruses, and we will sequence their spike proteins, reverse engineer them into binding assays into the bat coronaviruses, the humanized bat coronaviruses backbones. And we're going to use these to infect humanized mice and assess the cause and capacity to cause SARS-like disease. And again, to make sure that antibodies and vaccines don't work against it. They say that they're going to inoculate the bats using automated aerosol system, transdermal nanoparticle applications, and edible adhesives. So they're going to use the lipid nanoparticles to either spray the bats down, have them breathe it in, have them eat something, or put something on their skin and in their little paws. Go on to the next slide. I'm tying this all together. This is the lipid nanoparticles that are being used. They made sure it looks like cholesterol so that when humans are injected with it, it actually gets picked up in our bloodstream. But also, it still is pretty much indestructible. So the lipid nanoparticles can be sprayed down, you know, again, in an aerosol version. They can be put in ice. They can be put in food. So at the Wuhan market, it was a seafood market, the ice could have been contaminated with the lipid nanoparticle encapsulated spike proteins, which we now know are made partially of venom in some cases. Go on to the next slide. If you don't believe me, this is the patent for on the Moderna website for the mRNA vaccine, clearly saying that we have lipid nanoparticles as part of the delivery system. The next slide. And it says that these lipid nanoparticles also contain advanced delivery devices that can deliver the mRNA or any substance, including a toxin, over a period of time, which may include but not limited to hours, days, weeks, months, or years. So people could be injected with a spike protein in a lipid nanoparticle that has a time-release capsule in it that has not been released yet. So go on to the next slide. And I just want to remind people that we actually are in a war. I did pick up Unrestricted Warfare.
And this was written by two Chinese communist colonels in 1999. And we were talking about that document years before 2020, by the way. So we were warning people years ago they were wanting to use bioweapons, and they were bragging in that about the psychological impact it would have.
Yeah, and they also talk about the importance of suppressing information and controlling information. If you don't think we're at a war with our own government, I want you to go to the next slide.
Okay.
If we are not at a war with our own government, why on December 13th, 2016, did Obama sign into law the ability to waive informed consent during an experiment? And we are all part of an experiment in the United States.
Whoa, whoa. Have you reported this before?
Yes.
Here? And
I want to remind people. I don't, Brandon, I don't remember. I can't keep track of
what. So you're telling me that in 2016, Barack Obama signed an executive order, or he signed the Cures Act, the Century Cures Act, that says that the government does not have to provide consent, informed consent.
Not only does the government, an independent review board, the FDA, a pharmaceutical company, does not have to provide informed consent in an experiment if. And people misread this. They think it's an and question. It's an or statement. Sorry. It's not an and statement. It's an or statement. Informed consent can be waived if it is not feasible, if it is contrary to the best interests of such human beings. And that's basically it. And
wow.
If it's not convenient.
I got 3 minutes.
So I just want, so we were lied to. This 15 months to slow the spread was a war. Then we were lied to, and that the original outbreak wasn't an outbreak. It looks like it was lipid nanoparticle encapsulated toxins that were in targeted cities. When Janet Woodcock had the audacity to get up this is from October of last year, saying that she had a comprehensive and rigorous review of the data to ensure the safety of all the vaccines. Go on to the next slide. Even though she was given an order by Albert Bourla on November 20th to cover up the data for the 12 to 15 year olds who had damning evidence regarding the serious adverse events and safety of it. Even though in that November 20th filing, I found out that a 17 year old boy's face was broken, probably because he fell over after being vaccinated, and it was simply dismissed. Okay, you know, these are issues. These people acted as criminals. Keep going on. I think this is, yeah, then, and then Walensky has the audacity to sit in front of the Senate and say children are not supposed to die. That's why you should get vaccinated. Yet poor Ernest, this poor father, Ernest Ramirez, lost his son after his son was vaccinated from the Pfizer vaccine. As he says, it was his best friend. He told his son it was him and him against the world. And now he goes home to an empty house because his government lied to him. Go on the next slide. And again, Janet Woodcock, the commissioner of the FDA, has the audacity to make a statement, this makes my blood boil, that as a mother and a physician, I know that parents, caregivers, school staff, and children have now been waiting for today's authorization. This is for 5 to 11-year-olds to vaccinate younger children against COVID to bring them back closer to a sense of normalcy. Go on to the next slide. Yet Maddie DeGray's mother, Stephanie, had to get in front of Congress and say, all we want is for Maddie, my daughter, to be seen, heard, and believed, because she has not been, and she desperately wants to get back to normal.
So let me just ask you in closing, because they're playing the music on me. So you're telling me that the COVID or the venom is not in the water, but you have just showed all the scientific proof and the medical journals and the patents to show there has been toxins and poisons, including venoms, in some of the vaccines. Is that true?
Yeah, and some of the spike proteins, but you have to read the full patent for the spike proteins, because that PRRA section, it's kind of, think of it as a little Lego piece. They're basically saying they can put in and out whatever they want as far as sequences from various venoms of viruses, bacteria, and out.
Thank you, Karen. We had to bump Annie Cyrus. She'll be with us Monday night because we didn't want to interrupt Karen's great, great presentation. We'll post this online. Thanks for watching. Take care.